Hi, everyone. Welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. My name is Michael Schneider, and I am the television editor at Variety based in Los Angeles. Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, puts a spotlight on highly topical and trend-setting industry issues, creating a compass for the forthcoming film year. The year-round podcast is produced in cooperation with Goethe Institute and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Today's episode is right on schedule for the Berlinale Series Market, taking place as part of the EFM from February 16 to 19. Industry experts, creatives, buyers, and distributors will meet at Cinemax X at Potsdamer Platz and Gropius Bau for a conference program and international showcases, making it the EFM center for all of the market's serial content from all over the world. The event also features a selection of 17 shows from different markets around the world with high market potential. Berlinale Series Market selects. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about programming trends, what's going on in the industry internationally, how domestic is impacting things as well, and we have a fantastic group of folks to talk a little bit about that. So let's bring them in right now. First off, he is one of the founders of The Whole Spiel, and I've known him for years. He worked at NBC Universal as chairman of NBC. He was at the BBC for a long time. So glad to see you, Mr. Paul Telegdy.
Well, Mike, I was so glad to hear from you, and I'm here in Berlin, so what a coincidence.
Perfect timing. Next up, she's the international creative executive for Beta Film, and before that, she worked in many national and international TV and feature films and so much more. Anna Rode. Anna, welcome.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm still in Munich, but looking forward to coming to Berlin.
Fantastic. And EFM's country in focus this year is Spain. So Maria Cervera is from Spain. She's the head of content and an executive producer for Madrid-based production company Catalia Producciones. Did I get that right, Maria?
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Maria. Thank you for being here. And he is Banijay's joint head of scripted creative, Steve Matthews. He's worked on production development processes so much more. And before Banijay, he was at HBO Europe, where he was VP of executive producer of scripted. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. So obviously an interesting time to talk about international. And I'm going to put Paul on the hot seat first because he most straddles sort of the U.S. and international. And I don't know if you've heard, but the U.S. is in a bit of crisis right now. It's things are a little dicey here in the States. Obviously the entire world just went through a pandemic, but the U.S. just went through dual strikes. And then, of course, we've seen the evolution of the streaming businesses. There was a collapse of the Netflix business in 2022, which caused a panic and freak out among everyone in the States. And now Netflix has obviously recovered and they're doing better than ever, but everyone else seems to still be figuring out their footing. So it is a very interesting time domestically, but a lot of them are looking toward international, particularly Netflix, and seeing so much opportunity there. So I'm curious your take on the status of the business in your territories, but also how the impact of this kind of collapse of the business domestically is impacting things. So Paul, you straddle both. So that's a long prelude to get you to kind of talk about what you're thinking these days.
Can I start by saying, Steve, were you at HBO Europe during the Bjornstad or Beartown years?
Yeah, I did that. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
I think that may genuinely be one of my favorite programs of the last 10 years. And I thought it was unheralded. And I loved the book, but I thought the piece was astonishing and almost emblematic, really, of the moment in the business that it found itself.
Yeah. Oh, I'm delighted to hear that.
Since you asked such a sort of fundamental question, and I can't help but feel like, as someone who was in business at HBO 20 years ago for things like Rome and Tsunami, the Aftermath, and the kind of hardcore co-production business of when it was even hard to access the US market with English language programming from the BBC. And we felt like a visiting peasant going to the big town to go and doff our cap and kiss the ring and come back with enough money to satisfy an audience that was wanting more spectacle, You know, this was beckoning in the gilded era of television that you and I straddled. I moved to LA in 2004, so 21 years ago. And let's also say that I'd worked in the business 10 years before that as well. And you have to have a certain kind of constancy and believe in one thing to get through all of that, which is people are people, and they like to gather around a fire and like to hear stories and tell stories. Beginning, middle, end.
So what does that mean now?
What does that mean now? Well, I'm a very competitive person, Mike. So within all of the storytelling, I also like to tell the best stories and hear the best stories and be a part of that. If you've done good work, you will hear from me. And if you don't, it's because it's just out there, isn't it? And that's the problem we all face is, oh, what should we watch tonight? Anything that was ever made anywhere on planet Earth. Oh, and then one's to believe that machines do everything better than people, including picking television programs and movies. And, you know, I've been an observer of this because I've made it in the grindhouse of like, oh, we've got 5 episodes this week, EastEnders, BBC. I've seen it in the 22 episode a year model, where every single creator who bemoaned the passing of the 22 episode model was locked in a battle with us not to deliver 22 episodes a year. Well, that's Law and Order and all of those shows and the network model, which you can see, you know, we were talking about it today, like which shows killed which bits of the business. And, it, you know, like there are sort of some extraordinary stories that were heralded as game-changing television that had all of us scratching our heads saying, are you sure you're watching the same show as me, mate? Because I saw the original House of Cards. So I you know, so where to begin, where to end on answering a question as fundamental as that is. The world was always Chicken Little-ing. After my first MITCOM, people were like, this thing, cable, it will kill us all.
You're right. There's always been an element of the sky's falling, the industry's collapsing, but there's always been an answer and there's always sort of a new opportunity.
And there is now. And of course there is now. What we're in is the reset hasn't even begun, is what I would just say to everyone. If you're really thinking about the impact of current technology, the lag from the pandemic, the what? How much are you spending on TV shows these days? Get back to Earth.
The one thing is, you know, we talk a lot about the volume, and there is so much content, but that also means opportunity. So, Paul, you mentioned how back in the day it was impossible to shop your programming internationally, or it was a lot harder. But now in this age, you know, the walls have fallen. And Maria, I'm curious, I mean, with formats especially, you know, there is no barrier to entry anymore. And we've seen hit Spanish shows in the U.S. We've seen, of course, I mean, we all could talk about Squid Game all day, that, you know, this global hit that came out of nowhere out of South Korea. And so what are you finding out? How bullish are you in the opportunity to balance both doing local for local, but also seeing an opportunity of, oh, maybe this thing could travel?
Well, I think, you know, I agree with what Paul said before, is that we all need to, like, we are longing for stories. And when we have good stories, there is opportunity for people in different countries, different markets, to actually start enjoying them as well. And I think here in Spain, we are lucky to be also, you know, we are part of a big Spanish-speaking community around the globe. It's a lot of people speaking Spanish all over. That helps a bit, because I believe some audiences still struggle with the subtitling, or even if there's this great dubbing, but it's still something foreign about that. But we, you know, before there was Squid Game, there was a Money Heist. And that actually changed a lot for Spanish productions, because it opened audiences, it opened Spanish shows to bigger audiences around the globe. Like to this day, I think Money Heist and the spin-off Berlin is one of Netflix's biggest hits ever.
Huge, huge.
So, yeah, and thanks to that, like there was a time before that where Nordic series were a genre itself. No, it came the time where Spanish shows were a thing to watch, and I think Korean shows are there right now. That's a great thing, and Turkish have been there as well. I think that's great.
Yeah.
When one non-English speaking show becomes successful, it attracts audiences. People react to that. They connect to these characters. It opens so many opportunities to producers and to storytellers from that country.
Yeah, Steve, I've always been fascinated by that we do have these hot regions, and we've seen quite a few. Yeah, there was that moment in time where those Nordic murder mysteries were the hottest thing around. I'm still impressed by those Turkish telenovelas that travel well, including here on Univision in the U.S. And yeah, obviously everyone's looking for the next Squid Game, the next South Korean hit. But what do you see in terms of hot territories? Is there a new one? What happens when your territory sort of tapers off because a new territory seems to be the flavor of the moment?
I don't know if you can predict it. I mean, you're absolutely right. Nordic Noir was that particular thing at that particular time with that particular penetration into BBC Four and so on and so forth. And I agree with Paul. You know, some of these things are a little bit too expensive in some places. Spain is impressive for a number of reasons. You know, there was Money Heist. As the streamers have retreated, we're back into more of a distribution game. So there's a slight advantage to Spain that there's an entire continent, most of which speaks in the Spanish language, and a third of the world, and all of these things are true. But also, I mean, having worked there, because roughly the same time as I was doing Bear Town, I was doing Patria and 30 Coins with Poughkeepsie in Spain, and there was clearly a cultural thing. There was clearly a cultural boom in the way they were writing. There was a confidence coming through. So I don't think you can necessarily predict where the next one's going to be. But I put my money on Central Europe. I put my money on Poland, I think. Anna's looking at me because she knows that I've worked out there a lot, and Operation Sabre, that, you know, low production costs and a cultural boom. But you can't know. In my job, which is at the center of Banjay with lots of different production companies, I'm like Paul, I'm an old geezer that remembers the 90s. And in the 90s, like, it was really hard. And now we're saying to the young producers, were you surprised that everything was distorted for a little while? You know, I'm flattered that you said that about Bear Town or the success we had with Patria in Spain, two big adaptations, which I think were both risky and edgy. But I don't really see that anything's different. No, you just have to make the best shows possible. Financing, I don't know anything about money. But what I'm saying to the production companies, particularly the younger producers, just because the market looks conservative, that doesn't mean just do empty cop shows. What you've got to do is be more creative, not less creative. And I believe that really passionately. But where the next one is going to be, that's not my job. I try and follow the trends and help and support when I see something coming up.
Well, you said Central Europe, so I'm already putting some money in some Polish shows.
Poland. buy zlotys, I say.
There we go. Well, you know, the finances, obviously, it's interesting because that's one of the biggest changes that's happened. And we've seen also that pendulum switch, because there is a period of time where, you know, particularly, you know, major international streamers like Netflix were looking to buy out the entire ownership. And that limited opportunity for independent producers, especially in, you know, how do I sort of participate in the success if the broadcaster owns the back end and owns the international rights, etc. Are we seeing that change at all, Anna? From a financial perspective, is it still tough to hold on to global rights? Is there opportunity now to go back and sell into local markets? How is the financing evolving in terms of ownership of these formats and shows?
Well, obviously, from our side, it's more... I'm working in the content and corporate unit, and we are depicting young creatives, brilliant creative visions, talking about Operation Sable, which Steve just said. I mean, we have been following the project since 2019. It has been developed at midpoint. Steve was there.
Which I teach at. Exactly, yeah.
I remember. And I mean, it turns out to be a very, very good show. Not necessarily an expensive one, because you don't need so much money to tell a story really well. So, I mean, and when it comes to the financing, of course, we are there to support either on an NG basis, sometimes on the development basis, but not very often, because we're not the first to come on board. I mean, we are the first to talk to support, to, like, I don't know, be the shoulder to cry on, maybe to navigate, maybe to help the financing, maybe to bring people together. We are the ambassador of creative ideas, of culture traveling, but we are not the ones who are coming first on the financing side. But, I mean, of course, we have a lot of contacts, not only to the German market, but also internationally. And it's more easy for a giant like Betafilm, I would say, to navigate the interest of an really good creative idea.
So Anna, the classic question we always ask, what are some of the trends that you're seeing out there? What are people gravitating to right now? Are there specific genres, formats that people seem to be more high on than normal right now?
Well, I'm more or less overlooking the CEE market together with my colleague from the sales side. So I'm really interested in these stories coming from that area, and that are always stories for settling around social issues, personal issues, political issues. I mean, obviously, this region is struggling with a very difficult past, and we are coming back to this difficult past. We have a not that easy political situation all over the world. We have to position ourselves in a working democracy. We have to position ourselves against tech feudalism. So it might be more interesting to support these people who find a voice there and to have stories that may not be so, like, of course, entertaining, but also really relevant and timing for these days. Because the most important thing to tell the people is not about money, actually. It's about values. So these actually are my favorite projects.
Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, but we may need some of that here in the U.S. as well.
Yeah, that would be good. We would like to support that too.
It's an interesting time, and I think that's why a lot of folks here, we're talking blue sky again. Yeah, we're going back to, maybe shows that are escapist. Paul, are you hearing that a lot from people? What are you hearing in terms of people, what people want to watch now and develop?
Well, again, I think it's like, well, we all know what we'd like ourselves and audiences, and most of the traditional television platforms, including Netflix and Amazon and places like that, really cater for 35 plus audiences. Mainly, I mean, as if anyone's got kids under the age of 25, they use YouTube. And so for the 35 plus audience, which is really, I include myself in, I think that, look, your response to what people will be talking about, like troubled times, well, they can be either you kind of go and watch a 20-year-old show and get a warm drink and, funny enough, I'm here in Europe and the vibe's more man the barricades. I've seen huge protests in London and Berlin, like millions of people milling about, waving things. And I don't know who's who, frankly, most of the time. And there's lots of, here in Berlin, you really do get a sense that actually that nervous energy is going to supersede a lot of young audiences' desires to even engage in storytelling, very fast-paced world, short-form content, and YouTube and everything available to them. So, yeah, for me right now, I've been trying to watch a lot of TV. I've been traveling on the way from my family. And I've been trying to settle into things and finding it very hard. The last thing that I watched back to back was 100 Years of Solitude on Netflix. And that's because I loved that book years ago. That book transported me to place. I never thought I would read a book like that in my life. So when I saw Netflix is adapting a book that I read that I loved, I settled into it. But it was because it was so other to what's going on in the real world. So I think that the escapist fantasy of dwelling in bits of things that make you feel nostalgic and not like the world is either on fire or that people are going to start dropping dead from untold diseases. Eggs at nearly $20 a packet where you shop, Mike. Well, eggs don't cost that much here in Berlin. So they're fighting different battles here. So in a world of really, really funny ideas, I think that the retreat should be to quality storytelling. If you want to escape, by all means, imagine dystopian worlds. Well, excuse me, we wrote a drama 5 years ago that predicted a world in which maniacal tech billionaires would be wandering the world with communication platforms at their knees, where ask any of the people that lead those big tech companies whether they have any censorship issues or business issues or freedom of speech issues around what they can and can't do. And watch as they're cutting checks to clear the decks with the administration around libel suits and defamations in their news divisions. So the dystopian reality that you can see manifesting in wars in different places and all of that. That feels not a fun place to go. So people are looking for blue skies. That has always just been a generic hold-all term for such a broad category of programming. Everyone's blue sky has a different tone. So that's why, Mike, I know you're probably rewatching Breaking Bad for the 11th time or something. Like.
these days it's West Wing. I just, that's wish fulfillment. But it's funny that you should mention that because there are some dystopian shows that are almost blue sky because they are fantastical. They're fun to watch in a way. They're violent, but at the same time, shows like Silo on Apple TV Plus, very dystopian, but yet I enjoy watching because it's so creative. So who knows? Maria, what did you last watch that you enjoyed?
Well, I was thinking about that when it was like, because I think my sort of blue skies is super relatable characters that in a way go through struggle, but you are relieved when they come to a sort of happy ending. I talked with my colleagues here that one of my favorite shows, if not that my favorite show last year, was Mr. Bates against the Post Office. And it was there was something so special in these characters who you were, you could recognize as your, even like not being British, as your own neighbors, as the people next door, going through emotions, going through all these struggles, and then this little kind of like the silver lining at the end that actually is changing for the better, even if it's not like resolute. And we had a couple of shows here in Spain that went into the same direction. Probably the most successful show last year was Movistar Plus Querer, which is the story of a woman struggling to bring in her abusive husband to court and struggling to actually point out what kind of emotional abuse she had been through. And there is a silver lining and happy end sort of like way through that keep the audiences invested in these characters because there was the possibility for them to become better, to be better. And then I would say my happy place right now is like strong characters with whom I want to spend time. And I want to, I kind of this warmth comes from them and makes me wanna be part of their world in a way because I see some part of myself in them. And that's something that does not exclude the other kind of shows, which are the escapism. I want to see this thriller where a lot of things happen next that I also watch. But the ones that stick with me are the small characters that turn big somehow.
Do you find that that's what people are bringing you or what's the
sort? I see it's difficult to find, but when you find it, you know it. Like we are working a couple of those projects, which you see is like this story I want to be part of because I want to be close to these characters. It goes beyond the stories about these characters that you need to become part of their world somehow. And I think that's to me one of the greatest things about the series format, that you actually want to spend time with them and that you invite them into your living room in a way. There is this Spanish showrunner who talks about series that are home for you. And I think that's something that I'm not seeing very frequently, but when we see it, oh yes, let's grab it.
And how often are you looking at shows that will really resonate with the local audience versus shows that might resonate globally? And is that something that you even think about, or does that just come later?
To me, it starts with the story and the characters, really. Like, it needs to resonate locally before it resonates internationally because, call me a romantic, but I think it is something called the soul of a show. And if that is not there, you will probably never get too fast because you need to win over so many people throughout the process of making a show. Like, it's the storytellers first, the creators, but then you go with them along the way and you find people to finance it. And these people have to convince other people. And then, of course, until it gets to audiences, it's such a long path that you really, really need to have people enthusiastic about what you are telling. And you can only get these people into your team if you believe in it yourself.
And it's that classic thing, you can't manufacture a hit. Sometimes you're still surprised.
Good, so.
Yeah. Steve, what did you last watch that you really were impressed by or you really were thrown off by that you were surprised at how good it was?
Don't tell anybody, but I'm binging Reacher at the moment. But that's my guilty. It's my guilty pleasure. But
speaking of Blue Sky,
yeah. Well, Blue Sky, exactly. I mean, look, to be a loyal Banijay soldier, to use a couple of examples, two Banijay shows are coming from Spain to Berlin next week. Porto Cabo's lovely crime show, classic, pure co-production between ZDF and RTV, Vice and Morales. Blue Sky crime, two cops murders, and also this show from Poughkeepsie, Santario, which is a dystopia. What do they have in common? They're good stories with a propelling narrative. I don't buy into this kind of like the world is miserable, so everybody wants pink fluffy stuff. I think we kind of passed that. I think that it was interesting that the streamer explosion from the famous Netflix press release that you talked about in 22 coincided with a rise of people liking dark crime and true crime. So there's no correlation that way. After all these years, my conclusion is that audiences like good stories, and the least you'd mess with them, particularly from my point of view as an executive whose job is to help and support them as they make their recipe. But exactly as you say, Maria, it's absolutely their recipe. Again, Paul and I have been around long enough to remember the Euro pudding if you bend it too much in that direction. So I think we're past the local global thing now. I think everybody knows, let its culture be its culture. Let it be authentic. Because if it's not authentic in its soul and its bones, then it's never going anywhere. Look, what do they want? Crime, 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 crime. There's a statistic that 44% of the stuff coming out of Europe last year was crime. But that doesn't depress me, because The Sopranos is crime. The Wire is crime. Breaking Bad is crime. These are metaphors and narrative constructions that can still be about something and still be challenging. But I'm just an eternal optimist. And Mandalorian as well. I'm also binging that, which is the same show in a spaceship.
Are there other genres, though, Steve, that you sort of gravitate to? Maybe, your guilty pleasures? Are there things that you're looking for beyond sort of, the obvious ones?
I mean, crime is a very, very broad church. You know, Undoing is crime. Yeah. You can, Bear Town has got a crime in it. You wouldn't call it a crime drama, but it's got a crime in it, all the way through to Poughkeepsie's recent show, 1992, which has kind of got a supernatural edge. So it's a very, very broad church. But I personally quite like kind of horror and stuff like that. So I've very much enjoyed my time working with Alex de la Glazier at Poughkeepsie. I think the supernatural thing is in the game, and the romanticy, as they call it, again, Poughkeepsie's Corbimia and Corbitue are huge successes. So romance is definitely an area to watch as well, I believe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Anna, how about you? Anything that you've watched recently that you really enjoyed?
Oh, yeah, there are a million things. But I can only underline what has already been said, because I very much love also the Spanish series, because the Spanish series, they are all of very high quality storytelling wise, and they're edited very well, they're performing very well, and they have social really relevant topics, and they're used to handle it in a very, very precise and nice way. I can highly recommend the shows that are on the showcase now in the next week on Monday. So we have, there's Shades, and then we are talking about Pubertad, which is really also a very interesting social case. That's about, yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but I mean, of course, it's about families, it's about toxic relationships, it's a little bit about misuse. So, but it's told in a very, very intriguing and extraordinary entertaining way. So this is what I enjoy most. And of course, then I also enjoy when a story turns out with unexpected turns, because talking about crime, 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 it's always managing expectations of the audience. You know exactly what's happening. And this might be, kind of guilty pleasure for the end of the day, but I really like to be challenged also intellectually. I would like to be challenged by, there are some hints, there are some leads going nowhere. No, it's not going nowhere. It's paying off right in the next couple of scenes ahead. So it's, I'd like to do a puzzle also on TV, and I'd like to follow some really nice characters I can identify with. And that could be anyone.
Right. No, those puzzle shows, those often are the ones that stick with you the longest and you think about for weeks and months after.
One of the things that I think is a huge trend, okay, which again, the world of comedy. I'm in Germany, okay, and it's, let's say it is a market like no other. despite what you might think, I've been coming here many years, and I've lived in Austria and Switzerland and Belgium, and I've lived all over the world. But I've always thought it amazing how, like, let's just say, and Anna, you're German, the concept of German comedy was always like slightly antithetical to the rest of us. We knew you laughed at stuff, but we never quite understood what. Okay. And I say this with love, with my co-founder, who is German and sitting in our head office here in Berlin, that if you go on a top 10 Netflix in Germany, or on a whatever a ranking will be, there's still a surprising amount of what I would call good old fashioned comedy from America, Mike. And I was here, I was like, two shows in the Netflix top 10 coming from a mainstream American studio. And I guess people are watching them dubbed or however they traditionally are. That wouldn't you like to be laughing more is what I always ask people. And then deep in the bowels of the organizations where I work, BBC and NBC. No, you know what? We never could ever make sense of the math of nearly everybody's favorite show nearly bankrupted the network along the way, Mike. The Office, 30 up. Parks and Recreation, which was nearly canceled. Those shows, okay. And then I emailed George because I'm like, Ghost is in the top three in Germany. And guess what? They know King of Queens, Two and a Half Men, and all those great American comedy shows, a huge Modern Family, massive. People love to laugh, America. Please remember how to do that and carry on doing it. The comedy community, it's not, it shouldn't just be like angry old men shouting into microphones. There's a lot of stand-up, but don't we all miss comedies?
Yeah, and I think they are, to some degree, coming back. There's definitely been a movement, especially at Netflix this fall, had a few more comedies in the mix. And this spring, we're seeing shows like Return of a Steve Carell and Tina Fey show coming back. And you know, there are new at-bats. But you're right. I think, at least domestically in the U.S., the strikes really killed the comedy business for a couple of years, and it's just now sort of coming back.
But you saw the data. If you unpack the last 20 years, still right now, a third of the audience is watching a comedy made over 10 years ago.
Some of those comedies are forever. You know, when you look at just the staying power of a show like Friends, that is still beloved by new generations that, you know, weren't even alive when that show originally was on the air. Steve, I'd be curious your thoughts on this too, because the stereotype for a long time was that, you know, comedy doesn't translate, that it doesn't travel, and that it's so difficult to get a comedy hit to travel. And yet we've seen a lot over the years do that. You know, UK comedies have traveled everywhere, and of course those US sitcoms have traveled every year, but yet there is still that stereotype. So Steve, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that is the perceived wisdom is they tend to be more local, they tend to be more language based, so they don't travel quite so well. It's a market that's dominated by the English language. But I'm smiling because I've just come back from a week doing my thing called the Banerjee Bootcamp, where I bring ideas and writers and producers from the different labels, and we lock ourselves away in Prague for a week and drink lots of beer and eat lots of sausages and see how much work you can do in a week. And this year we took on one of our German labels, Made For, with a sitcom, which on paper was exactly as you say, Paul. It's a precinct. It's not Moody. It's not HBO. It's not Art House. But when you get into a room with these guys, I mean, hey, they're super, super funny guys, but they've got a clear, clean idea and they know exactly what it's about, what it's really about. It's a complete 360 idea. And I came away thinking the same as you. Let's do more. Let's help German comedy. Let's do more of this stuff. It's another example of you don't have to be highbrow to write about something.
Well, and Steve, by the way, at the heart of that is also a commercial message for all the people in the business. I don't know, what's the number one show in Argentina, asks himself. Well, I was doing some research on Telefe, the Argentinian broadcast network. And guess what? A local version of Married with Children, still a time slot winner. Wow. And so the local versions of comedies, if they're in precincts, Superstore, Thin Blue Line was that ITV show that traveled the world. You know, if it's a cop station in Mitte, it probably looks a bit like a cop station in New York.
And you raise an interesting thing, how you get into the local and come out the other side into the universal to make them really chime with everybody. There's no, I don't know how you do it, but when it works, it's magic.
Well, it's a 25-year life. Again, you know, like when you're filling your library, you can fill them with certain things. I'd say comedy will make money over years.
So Maria and Anna, comedy, your thoughts?
Of course, there's Tatortreiniger, Hell Funny, very good format. And then we had Shameless. I mean, I love Shameless, and this is traveling well as well. So it's, I mean, from Germany, yeah, there are some comedies. I guess we started a bit late because the comedies from the US side, it's really language-based. They have very good dialogues. And in Germany, it's more like it's a situation comedy. It's a, yeah, we have in the sitcoms. When it comes to sales, the comedy is not traveling that well than drama. That's for sure.
Yeah, Maria, what do you find?
I think, you know, first, you know, Spain had to adapt from a tradition in broadcasting comedy from the length, because we used to have 70-minute comedies. And this took a while, you know, because and there was no other way to do those than to do them ensemble, because this is the only way to can actually keep the rhythm as a comedy. So it is, has been the last, I would say, 3-4 years where the 30-minute comedy has come back to Spain. And actually, thanks to Netflix, which started with Alpha Males, which is traveling quite well with some remakes as well. We are, for instance, working on a couple of those 30-minute original stories, because it's really tricky to adapt that for now. The format market is not that big in Spain. That said, that, you know, there's like always the obsession. But I think the challenge first for the comedy writers in Spain was to adapt to the shorter format. And now that they are getting it, I think people are really loving to have, you know, to have that kind of engagement that only comedy provides. That because it's you can see it at the reruns that are still topping the top 10 list on Netflix, Amazon, and all the other streamers. These are these old episodes of 70 minutes comedy. So that's not a problem for viewers. But yet they're impossible to produce them right now, and there's no need to do that. So yes, there's a bright future for comedy in Spain in small forms, like in number of episodes and in length, but definitely a good way ahead.
It's funny, and Paul, I know you can appreciate the fact that we're talking about comedy, right? When one of the big controversies of the past 2 years here in the U.S. is the fact that there are so many dramas masquerading as comedies, shows like The Bear that is clearly not a comedy, but it's half an hour or so. It's submitted as a comedy at the Emmys and then wins. But I do feel like the pendulum is swinging back the other way, and we're seeing the return of comedy here.
People are definitely fanning the flames, trying to get it back.
So I think what we've decided is that we need more comedy in our lives, but we're also bullish in general on storytelling, that there is a lot of exciting storytelling right now. And despite a lot of the challenges that the industry is facing, both domestically and globally, that there's a lot more opportunity, perhaps. So I feel the optimism. Well, thank you so much, Paul. Always, I love your insights. Anna, Steve, Maria, thank you so much for joining us as well. Best of luck. Have a great time at the festival. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. See you around.
Industry Insights is produced in cooperation with the Goethe Institute and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. The Berlinale Series Market is the EFM's boutique market for serial content from all over the world. From February 16 to 19, industry experts, creatives, buyers, and distributors will meet again at Cinemax X at Potsdamer Platz and Gropius Bau. Find further information about the Berlinale Series Market on www.efm-berlinale.de. Berlinale Series Market's main partner is Film und Media Stiftung, NRW, is funded by Medienbord Berlin-Brandenburg, and the media partner is Variety. Please do tune in to future episodes of Industry Insights. Find us wherever you get your podcasts and on the website of the European Film Market, www.efm-berlinale.de. And thanks for tuning in.